What up, what up, what up, everybody? This is the Dr. Football Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien. Joining me as always, your co-host, the CEO of HedgeBetter himself, Justin Fine. Justin, what is going on tonight, my man?
Oh, it's just, you know what? It's another week, another long week. I'm sure you're feeling it, right? It's always, you know, when the holidays end, you take a little time off. And then those first few weeks afterwards, it's always just a mad dash trying to scramble.
Well, we were going to record in person tonight, but the reason we're recording remote is because we made the stupid mistake of scheduling this during rush hour.
Yeah.
And like, good luck getting from Dedham to Braintree at 4:45 or 4:30 at night. So we just like, all right, we're just doing remote. Screw it. But it's just seriously, a busy time and we're back to our normal routine. The weather sucks. It's the days are still short. It's just kind of a tough time of year.
It is. It's a weird time of year. And you know what? Like we're getting ready for playoff football. And you know what? Like for the first time in God knows how long, maybe ever, I'm sitting here like thankful that the Patriots season is behind us. And I just can't ever remember feeling like that before, you know?
Justin, I am so thankful that you hit the nail on the head. That was the first thing I was going to say, is that like, I'm so happy it's over. Like this was a debacle of a season, really. For the season was over in October. Like, it was over after that New Orleans game. And then, you know, the final nail in the coffin was that Commanders game. The season was dead in the water before Halloween.
Absolutely. I mean, look, you saw this team, what went from being a promising first couple of games. I mean, look, I know their record wasn't hot out the start, but this was a team that, you know, they took Philly down to the wire. They had a couple of real nail biters to start the year. And you really just thought once they got through the gauntlet of their opening schedule and settled into the season, that this would be a team that could maybe crawl their way back into competing. And unfortunately, things just went from bad to worse. I think we can both agree there's been a little bit of an improvement towards the end of the year with some of the changes that were made, specifically at quarterback. But this was just overall just an awful year for the Patriots, and it was over way sooner than anybody, I think, even thought possible.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, we talked in the preseason about this, the floor being lower than the ceiling was high. And we were, I think, really on point with that, because we were both open to the very realistic possibility that this could be like a 3-4-5 win team. If you go back to the episodes we recorded in the summer, we talked extensively about the floor of this team being really low. So, but I don't think either of us really thought it would be. It would actually happen, but it did. And I think we knew the day they showed up to play the New Orleans Saints at home and they got blown out of the water 34-0. You're like, okay, this season is effectively over. There was still a mathematical path, but it was done. And then a couple weeks later, they come out and they lose to the Commanders at home. And then it's like, okay, it's October 27th. And this is a done deal. Mac Jones is done. The season's done. Belichick's up in the air. Anyways, we got a great episode today for everyone listening. We got a lot of stuff. We're going to get into the whole Kraft Belichick thing. I mean, that's the big story this week. And, you know, we're going to talk about Mike Vrabel, the big news today that he's been fired and how that fits in. There's so much to go through. It's the thing that's crazy about it, Justin, is there's credible reporting on both sides of this issue right now, that there's credible reporting that's saying that makes you think Belichick's maybe going to stay. And there's credible reporting that is implying that he's gone and it's a done deal. And it's just really kind of crazy, the things that are flying around. So some of it has to not be true, but it's all coming from credible sources. So it's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. And you know what, the thing that makes it, I think, even, I guess, like extra spicy is the fact that, like, I really didn't know if there would be anybody in the market that I would want to come in here, you know, or I would be looking forward to coming in here if they were to move on from Bill. I can't say I was expecting Mike Vrabel to get fired from the Titans. Like, that's somebody that I would welcome with open arms into the Patriots organization as a head coach. So, like, just little wrinkles like that are even just making this way more interesting, knowing now that there's options out there that we didn't think we may have even had before.
Absolutely. I'd say that's a big wrinkle. I'd say it's a big wrinkle that Vrabel just getting released. We thought Patriots fans, we thought we're going to have to trade for Vrabel if we wanted him. And now he's shaking free. We'll get into the whole Vrabel thing in a second. Let's start with the kickoff, open and take to set the table for the podcast, Justin. And what I really want to begin with is something we've hit on a few other times over the last year or two. But I personally, Justin, right now, to this point, I don't blame Robert Kraft for anything that's happened to this point. Because to me, when the greatest coach that's ever coached won you six Super Bowls, got you to three other Super Bowls, 19 winning seasons, 17 division titles, a legend in his own time. When he comes to you and he tells you Tom Brady's cooked, he comes to you, we got to get rid of him. He comes to you, he tells you, I'm bringing in Matt Patricia and Joe Judge. You know, I don't know how it would have been reasonable for Robert Kraft. I don't know how Robert Kraft could have said no to him based on the history, based on what Belichick had accomplished for this franchise.
Yeah.
So I give Kraft a pass for everything up until this Sunday at 4 o'clock. Because now that this debacle of a season is over, Robert Kraft, you're on the clock to fix this mess. This whole thing was a disaster this year. It was literally, and I know you'll agree with this, it was an unwatchable product. I'm a diehard. You know that. I went to 7 home games this year, 7 of the 8 home games. The only one I didn't go to was the Miami game. This was unwatchable football for most of the season. Like, not even bad football, because bad football would almost be welcome. This was literally an unwatchable product. They are the worst offense in the NFL in 10 years. I sat through 3 Patriots home games this year. That's almost 10 hours of my life. New Orleans, the Jets, and the Chargers, where the home team got one field goal. One field goal in 3 games. I mean, really, that's how bad it was. And I'm sitting there on Sunday. I'm at Gillette Stadium, and I can barely even watch it. It's half filled. The stadium's half filled. They announce a crowd at 40,000 people. I'm as interested in anyone and what's going on with the Patriots. I could barely tolerate watching it. It was boring. It was not a fun experience. I didn't want to be there. Half the people there are on their phone half the time. Most people aren't even watching the game. No one's interested in the product. You're there out of some misplaced sense of obligation. How long can this sustain for this franchise at this level of an unwatchable product? I think it's a huge factor in Robert Kraft's decision-making. I think it puts a lot of pressure on Kraft to get this right. You could argue it either way, that he should keep Bill or get rid of Bill. What's the right move? I don't know. But whatever he does, Robert Kraft has to get this right, because this franchise cannot go on putting up the product that it put out this year.
No, it can't. And you know what? I mean, look, at the end of the day, I mean, we've both said that for us, you know, and I think that most Patriots fans would agree to this. It's not so much about who needs to change. It's about what needs to change. Like, if you told me, like, hey, this is what we are going to do, and you can tell me, you can guarantee me that this is going to get us results, there's almost nothing you could suggest to change about this team that I wouldn't be on board. Like, we are results-oriented, results-driven as Patriots fans. And so, you know, if you said, hey, the best path forward is keeping Bill and doing yada yada, I'm on board. If the best path forward is moving on from Bill and maybe going out and getting a Vrabel, I'm on board. If the best path forward is using that number 3 pick to, you know, take whoever, I'm on board. I just want the results. I think, like, at the end of the day, we've talked about, you know, the responsibility and the onus. I agree with you that, like, from Robert Kraft's standpoint, you know, you like the fact that he wasn't overstepping. He wasn't getting too involved and being obnoxious like some of the owners in the league. You know, I get it. How do you go against Bill Belichick and his word? But, you know, you're at the point now where I think Bill kind of showed us these last couple of games that, yeah, it's not that he can't coach. He just botched the rebuilds. That's really what it comes down to, is like the Mac Jones situation got botched. The guys that he brought in for, you know, his investment into the offense didn't pan out, both from a free agency and a drafting standpoint. But at the end of the day, this guy still gets players to show up and give 110%. He can still build the defense. Like, he can still scheme. So, like, I look at it and I'm like, okay, Bill is still a good coach. He just messed up the rebuild. And I understand why Robert Kraft sat alongside and let him do what he did. But now is where both of those ships need to be righted. Bill, if Bill's going to stick around and prove that he can continue to coach, he has to correct those mistakes that he made and get the rebuild back on track. And Robert Kraft has to make sure that that happens.
I mean, Belichick earned a long leash is basically, I think, what we're both saying. Right. And even though a lot of what he did was unorthodox or crazy, even the last couple of years, like, he earned that long leash. Like, how can Robert Kraft, who got burned, by the way, intervening in football matters in the Pete Carroll years and the Parcells years, Kraft got burned big time by that. And that's why I think he stayed out of it and kind of gave Bill Belichick the leeway to do what Belichick thought was right. And it worked for 20 something years. And obviously now, unambiguously, it hasn't worked. And I think this is why it's up to Kraft now to step in and figure this out. But up to this point, I just can't blame the guy. But now it's on him. And don't forget, Justin, this isn't just about winning. This is about economics too, because the revenue, the money that this franchise is generating right now. I mean, fans are going to lose interest, right? The stadium was already less filled. I mean, I looked down at the lower bowl in the second half of that game against the Jets this weekend from up in the GBA room. And I'm going to tell you, there were practices in the Tom Brady era where there were more people in that lower bowl than there were on Sunday. And that was the case several times this year, second half of the New Orleans game, the Chargers game, at other points in the year. This is not sustainable for the economics of running the franchise. You can't have a product unwatchable and this bad. I think back to 93, which is before you were born, right? Bledsoe's rookie year. The last game of the season, okay, that was the start of the Patriots sellout streak. They've had a sellout streak for 30 plus years. It goes back to the last game in 1993 is the last time they didn't sell a ticket in their home stadium. The stadium was 100% packed that day. That team was 5-11. Okay, they were excited. The crowd make noise. They stayed till the end, and the Patriots won that game against the Dolphins in overtime on a Bledsoe to Michael Timpson touchdown. But people were engaged. You go down there this Sunday, people were not engaged. They were not interested. A lot of them were there just to be there, not because they cared, not because they were passionate. And if I'm Robert Kraft, I'm taking notice of that, and it really ups the ante for whatever way he goes.
100%. I mean, and you can even argue that of the people that were there, a lot of them were probably just there just in case it was Bill Belichick's last game, coaching
that
the Patriots,
me,
right?
Justin.
Right, exactly.
That was me. I'm not there if that's not potentially Belichick's last game.
Exactly. And it's like, to look for, you know, it, to where things have gotten, you know, the point that we're at right now, you know, I think about, and I'm not sure if things have changed or, you know, if they haven't changed yet. I'm sure you might start to see change, but, you know, as a season ticket holder, I remember, you know, we were joking back in, you know, the 2012, 2015, 2018 era, like you were on a waiting list to get on a waiting list to get a Patriots season ticket. You know what I mean? And even to just go to a regular season game, you were spending like what some franchises, like for the nosebleeds, what some franchises were charging for like their lower bowl tickets to their best games. Like,
it was cheaper for fans to book a flight and buy a ticket in another city than it was to get a ticket at Gillette Stadium.
Yes, exactly. So you go from a situation where your tickets are one of the hottest commodities in the sports market, not only on a weekly basis, but on a seasonal basis, to the point now where, you know, I saw some of the ticket prices, you know, some of the last couple of weeks, and it's just,
$20.
It's so sad. And that's, you know, that's indicative. That's really indicative of the Patriots recognizing that, hey, this isn't just a down stretch. This is a downturn that is now in turn starting to affect the fan base in the support, because
let's be fair. They didn't catch any breaks for the weather this year either. Cause they got some really lousy weather. I mean, there's been a lot of years where they've had Sunday games in December and it's been gorgeous. You know, this year was a tough year for the weather. That didn't help with a couple of them, but you know, I think they can sustain a year like this, maybe another year after that. But if they go out and they bring in the next coach, they get rid of Belichick, and you know, you have another 3-year, 4-year run where you don't make the playoffs and you draft another Mac Jones or you draft the next Zach Wilson, right? And then where are you in 3 years? Now you've had 7 years since Brady's gone. Apathy has set in. You haven't done anything. You're the Arizona Cardinals. You're the Carolina Panthers. You're the Chicago Bears, the Cleveland Browns. You know, you're one of those perennially losing franchises. And how does that affect the revenue in the business for a guy who just made a huge investment in the stadium? And I just can't. I think it's a huge part of this. Whichever way he goes, because I'm not saying that means you got to get rid of Bill. I'm just saying, like, whether you keep him or get rid of him, the ante is high for Kraft and for this organization.
Yeah, big time. Couldn't agree more. And I think honestly, it's at its boiling point. I think things are starting to come to a head. And I think now it's something that can't be ignored. It's no longer just like the elephant in the room. It is now the obstacle preventing you from entering the room.
That's right. And all right, let's move on. Let's talk about Belichick himself and what's going on with the situation, with this coaching situation a little, Justin, because I'll tell you what, like, I was a little shocked and taken aback by the way that the things that Belichick said both Sunday night and Monday morning. And I think that, you know, basically coming out and saying he had a contract. That was the first thing he said. I have a contract. So my first thought is, well, we know who leaked the story about Bill Belichick having a contract on the morning of the Commanders game. Remember we had that conversation and we're like, well, we think probably it was Belichick that leaked it, but maybe we had a whole thing. Everyone did. Well, it was definitely Belichick because that was like clearly his thing. I have a contract. I'm showing up to work. It was a masterful move because it was a leverage play. Mm-hmm. It put all the onus on the Krafts. But I also think he signified a willingness to make concessions to stay here. And I don't think that was insincere because I know I'd be shocked if Bill Belichick wants to leave New England. I think he wants to stay here. Great salary. I think, as he said in his public comments, he's heavily invested in what's going on in Foxborough. He's got his kids working for him. His daughter lives in New England. His grandkids are here. He lives in Nantucket. Guy's 72 years old. He doesn't want to pick up and move to Los Angeles. Bill Belichick wants to be here, Justin.
I think he wants to be here too. I mean, you know, and I got to be honest, I want him here. You know, I'm not ready to sever that cord. I there were times, you know, at this point in the season or, you know, during this season where I think we both were kind of like, you know what? We're just so fed up. If it happens, it happens. If it needs to happen, it needs to happen. But just the way the season ended, you know, it kind of reinvigorated that little bit of hope in me that, you know what, like, it really would be a dumb thing to move on from this guy if, big if he wants to be here and if he still is invested in being the coach, right? Because that's really the big thing is, you know, I wouldn't want a Bill Belichick here just for the sake of saying we have Bill Belichick here, right? I want a Bill Belichick that's invested because even if Bill Belichick isn't, you know, hasn't been the best at modernizing and keeping up with how the league is changing, or even if he has made some mistakes over the last couple of years, an invested Bill Belichick that wants to win and wants to be part of an organization, I'll still take that over 80-90% of the coaches available or coaching in the NFL right now. So, you know what I mean? Give me a guy that wants to be here and I'll take him. And like we've said before, you know, the way that we lost Brady, the regrets that we have, you know, I think we all kind of realized that things could have been differently if he had stayed, seeing what he did when he went to Tampa. you just say, hey, the only thing that could make this botched rebuild even worse is if it winds up, you know, you lose Bill in the process. And now you got no Tom, you got no Bill, and you have no prospects for the future either.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've spent, anyone that's listened to this podcast knows that I've spent the last 2-3 years complaining and saying it's probably time to move on. But I think to me, the two things that changed over the course of this year is one, they really have rebuilt this defense. And I did talk about this a lot in the thing I wrote on our Facebook page. And I want to thank everyone. We had over 400 likes and almost maybe 100 comments. So I want to thank anyone that liked or commented on that. But you know, the defense is good, and they're stocked with young players. And the continuity of the defense, and just the combined with the fact that I've accepted the fact that Mac Jones sucks, and that Mac Jones was probably never going to be good, even though Belichick did a masterclass in how to screw the guy.
Right.
And there's no question about that. Mac was part of the problem. And drafting quarterbacks is a tough thing. Okay. It's a tough thing to draft a quarterback. It's a failure rate of more than 50%, no matter who you are.
Right.
So Belichick blowing the Mac Jones pick, I think for what he's done for this franchise and who he is, I think he deserves a second bite of the apple. I really do. And if he can be successful in drafting a quarterback, even an above average quarterback with this defense, I think that's your best path towards becoming a good playoff caliber franchise again. And that's why I'm sticking with him. It's not totally sentimentality. It really is rationally the continuity of the defense combined with the fact that, you know, he deserves a chance to bring in a good quarterback. He dropped the ball the first time. They all do it. So give him another crack at it. And if he's successful, you're right back there.
100%. And look, not only does it
happen. You're going back to square one, Justin. You're going back to square one. If you go bring in some young new guy, you're Carolina.
That's exactly it. And I mean, look, like, you know what, like would I like to bring in a Vrabel? Would I feel comfortable if you brought in like a Vrabel? I would, but you know what? It's at the end of the day, it's not Bill. It just isn't Bill. And you know, my big thing is I look at Bill and I look at this team and, you know, I just say what this team needs right now is, I think, we've said it, not to be cliche, but they really need to find the next franchise quarterback, because to me, like, that's the big, like, missing evaluation piece for Bill right now, right? Is like, we have seen some of the greatest coaches in history, whether it's NFL or not, fall short for multiple seasons if they don't have the horses on that team to perform, right? And now Bill has kind of a unique case where we can say, well, Bill, you're the main reason why those horses aren't there, right? So it is kind of, you know, presenting its own set of challenges in this circumstance. But ultimately, what it really comes down to is, I don't hold it against Bill Belichick that he wasn't able to be a contender with Mac Jones. Do we blame him for maybe blowing the pick? Sure. Do we blame him for maybe blowing a few picks and blowing the rebuild? Sure. But find me a coach that hasn't blown a pick. Find me a coach that hasn't maybe, you know, had a bad couple of seasons. I mean, I just really think that, you know, it's tough to say that Bill Belichick is done and he's washed up if he doesn't have a competent quarterback to be evaluated alongside. And that's just the truth.
In all fairness, he blew a lot more than the Mac Jones pick to put this offense
true,
in this position.
Very true.
You know, he blew a lot of the offensive line thing, right. The receiver, he blew a lot. But what I was really floored by was him coming out and saying that he would, when someone asked him if he would consider giving up the GM responsibilities, and he was like, yes, if it's, I'm willing to do whatever we think is best for the team. And I thought I thought he would keep a death grip on that GM job. But that was almost an acknowledgement. And I think it was sincere from Belichick that, hey, maybe this isn't working and I'm willing to be flexible to make this work because I do care about the team.
Yeah, 100%. And not only that, but like, let's just be real for a second. Like, Bill is who he is in the position that he is largely because we've known throughout the years, Bill has an ego. There's no doubt about it. There is an ego to Bill Belichick, right? And he's not chasing records or greatness as a GM. He's chasing records and greatness and legendary status as a coach, right? So if you look at how Bill's looking to finish out his career, right? I think as much as he may love being the king of the castle and you know, having the keys to the kingdom and running stuff from his perch as both the GM and the head coach, he probably looks at it and says, look, I'd way rather fulfill my legacy and end in a strong note as a coach. You know, I'll relinquish the GM job. Do I like it? No, but am I willing to do it to protect my status as one of the all-time great coaches, to not have to move on to somewhere else, to get to kind of finish my tenure out? I think it makes sense. Honestly, it's part of it.
Plus, like most people, right? Do you want to do something that you're really bad at?
Yeah.
And doesn't, after the last 4 years, like, how can he possibly be sitting there and saying, geez, I'm good at this, but I've just had a few bad breaks. Like, right. He's been terrible. And I mean, he probably says, look, I'm still a really good coach. And he is a good coach.
Exactly.
You know, I will be better off and happier if there's someone else picking the players. And then I can just do what I'm really good at. I used to be good at picking the players. And I believe Belichick used to be a pretty good GM. Yep. He had his hot points. Whatever. It's passed him by. I think he still can coach. Okay, look at how hard this team played and everything. And just the whole picture. Let him do what he's good at, and let someone else pick the players. I think, I mean, I'm surprised because he has an ego, but I thought it was, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think it was the right thing to do.
Yeah. And you know what? I mean, look, obviously nothing's like official, but to your point, like just the fact that he's willing to, be open about that, and he's considering it a possibility. That to me shows huge strides. I mean, because that's something that I think we both would agree that maybe Bill wouldn't have been okay with. And I think we're both pretty surprised to hear that he was open to it. So that to me within itself is a little bit of optimism.
But can I tell you one thing? And if you're just kind of thinking this out, like, I think part of it, as you said, is he really wants to repair his legacy as a coach, and he doesn't want to go out like this.
Yeah.
But if you really think about it from his perspective, right, what a gamble this is from him on his own legacy. Because what happens if he comes back and he works something out with the Crafts and then it doesn't work and you have like two or three more bad years, right? Mm-hmm. What are we going to be saying about Bill Belichick at that point? It's a huge gamble on himself in terms of how we see and remember Bill Belichick in his legacy in the NFL.
For sure. It's a huge risk, but you know what? I think like any other great competitor, like any other, you know, egomaniac athlete that, you know, sports personality that we've seen, totally. It's like, that risk I think is worth taking, because the thought of just going out on a low note or at your lowest note, I think is unbearable for some of these guys. And I think Bill looks at it right now and says, hey, you know, I am not at a point in my career where I can walk away with my head held high. And he wants to fix that.
It's the same thing that makes Michael Jordan or LeBron James want the ball at the end of the game, right? Like they believe in themselves, but it is a huge gamble. Let's talk a little, Justin, about some of the candidates for the job, if the Crafts and do decide to move on from Belichick. Some of the names being tossed around, you know, Mayo, Vrabel, Flores, Harbaugh. There's some other guys. Ben Johnson's the hot coordinator in Detroit. Any of those sound appealing to you? Like, I'll tell you right now, I think the big game changer, which we already discussed a little, was the Vrabel thing today and him being available. I like Vrabel, and I think he's a good coach, but I don't know if he's enough of a commodity that I would throw Belichick out the door. Like, if I felt like Belichick was the guy I wanted to keep or give him another crack, if I'm Robert Kraft, I don't think Vrabel is that great of a commodity that I'm now suddenly reexamining that. He's a good coach.
Yeah. You know, it's funny to me because I feel like you could almost draw some parallels, right? Maybe between a similar situation that we saw in New England and a similar dynamic when we had the whole like Jimmy G and Tom Brady situation, right? And we're sitting there and we have the greatest, arguably the greatest of all time, supposedly near the end of his career. And then you have, this hot commodity, younger, talented person who's could potentially be coming in, and it's the whole power struggle. Like, well, do you move on from Brady to let Jimmy grow? And, you look at it, and it's like, wow, you get a coach like Vrabel who's in the market, an opportunity like that to come back to New England. It's like, oh, what do? Do you keep Bill around for maybe 2-3 years, or do you bring Vrabel in and lock him up for the next like 5-10 years, it's really is like a catch 22. And I mean, look, we rolled the dice with Tom the first time around and it seemed to work out for us, right? Investing in,
it sure did. Because a lot of people, you'll remember like 2016, there were a lot of people that wanted to keep Jimmy G,
right,
and move on from Brady.
Right, exactly. And you know what? Those people, I mean, they didn't exactly have an awful argument. You know what I mean? Like, there was some validity to it. And I think you could look at the same thing. You have like an aging goat. People are arguing, is he near the end of his career? He's coming off of, a bad performance. You have an opportunity with someone like Vrabel, who I think a lot of people would argue is probably the top free agent coach out there right now, at least in my mind. So yeah, it's a very familiar and interesting dynamic. But as much as I would like to see Vrabel in here, I wouldn't want to see him in here at the expense of forcing Bill out early.
That's exactly how I feel. And I also think, Justin, that Vrabel is like Belichick light. And if you're just gonna bring in Vrabel, you might as well keep Belichick. If they're gonna push Belichick out, I honestly would rather them just go and completely rip everything down and go in a totally different direction. Like, I just feel like, you're getting, I would be happy if like Belichick said tomorrow, I'm retiring, or in different circumstances. Right.
Yeah.
And Vrabel came in. Like, I think that would be a great choice for Belichick's success, but I'm not pushing Belichick out the door for him. I don't think Vrabel had a ton of success in Tennessee. Like, he was above average if you look at his production. And the reality was, the reason why he was above average is because he never really had a great quarterback to play with.
Right.
And I think the same thing about Belichick. Like, Belichick, Vrabel, whoever's coaching here, they need to figure out the quarterback position more than anything. And that's how they're going to win games. A good coach and a great quarterback. That's the recipe. Vrabel and Belichick, to me, are cut from the same cloth. Vrabel's much younger, fine, but Belichick's much more accomplished. I would much rather just roll with Belichick if they're going to bring in Vrabel.
Yeah. I got to say, I'm in the same boat. And from what it seems like, it seems like not only does Bill have something left in the tank, but it seems like he wants to still be here. And as long as that's the case, I'm down to have him. Like you said, if Bill was leaving on his own terms, or there was some other circumstance at play, be more than happy to bring in Vrabel. But just the way things are at right now, it's one of those, tempting, but not tempting enough.
And I feel the same way, by the way, about Flores and Mayo. As much as I love both those guys, I mean, what have they really accomplished to make you push Bill Belichick out the door for them at this point? Like, I feel like you're always going to be able to find someone of that resume and background and credentials. If they go, the only guy that I would give that might up the ante for me and maybe tilt the scales towards pushing Belichick out for, and I doubt he would ever come here, is Jim Harbaugh, because I feel like he's a big name who has won everywhere he's been. He's won in college now. He almost won a Super Bowl in the pros. He built a terrific program. He has a pedigree in the league. And I think he would be someone that, to me, all right, that's worth pushing maybe Belichick out for. But I'm not even sure if I would do that. But if they're going to get rid of Belichick, I want them to bring in someone that's like new and just a totally new thing, new program, new everything.
Yeah, I agree with that point. The one thing I'd say about Harbaugh that would be interesting is, you got this whole kind of old, I guess you could call it, skeleton in the closet with Belichick, the cheating scandals of the past, right? Those monkeys that have kind of always been on his back. Well, look what's kind of been overshadowing Harbaugh in Michigan in this entire season, right? This giant cheating scandal. So how it would just be like such poetic justice if you push out like Bill Belichick, who was accused, and you know, a lot of haters and a lot of opposing fans want to say that he was a cheater and that's why he was so successful. And you put in, you push him out and you bring in a guy who just got accused of a huge cheating scandal in the college level and won a national championship. It would just be kind of funny, I think, just the narrative.
Yeah, but that I don't think any less than Jim Harbaugh because of that. Like, no. I think that's all just BS. Like, I really, like, I think it's a witch hunt. The same as I think I'd say about when Belichick went through it here. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
It's not going to deter me if I'm an NFL owner from bringing the guy in. You know, I don't hold it against them one bit.
No, it's a manufactured crisis for sure. But I'm just saying, you know, the fans, the media, the pundits, there'd be a fan, you know, a field day drawing those connections.
Yeah. But you know, the other thing I'll throw out there, Justin, on this topic is, look, you know, you never know what's going on behind closed doors with these NFL franchises. If you got a guy like a Sean McVay, like a Kyle Shanahan, right? And you obviously have to give up a draft pick or some kind of capital for that. That might also influence my opinion. But if you're talking a transition from Belichick to Belichick light, that's Flores, Mayo, Vrabel. I'm all set with that.
Yeah, totally agree.
All right, other side of the coin, if Belichick is fired at some point this week, Justin, there's six coaching jobs that are open right now. Atlanta, Carolina, Vegas, LA, Washington, and Tennessee. Which one of those do you think is the best fit for Bill? And which one do you think he'd be most likely to go to?
Whew. Well,
I can throw you mine if you want to hear mine.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you mine. And mine is going to be Washington. And I say that for a couple of reasons. Originally I was, you know, leaning Atlanta, but the more and more I think about Washington is, first off, they got Eric Bieniemy down there as offensive coordinator, right? And I think an offensive mind like that is something that Bill needs.
Fire the whole staff or just Rivera?
I thought it was just Rivera.
I think it was just Rivera too. We have to look that up.
Right. But if Bieniemy's still there, that would be a great, I think, offensive supplement to Bill Belichick. The other thing too is this is an organization that's under new management and ownership, right? Magic Johnson and his group came in. He's been on record. Exactly. They've been on record saying that, like, they're willing to do whatever it takes to win. They want to restore the culture. Doing this and that. So, you know, I just feel like that could be a good fit, landing down there with an ownership group of winners that is ready to make big changes. They're ready to make big investments. But I don't know. That would be my guess, I say.
Yeah, no, I actually don't disagree with that. So my ranking of these six jobs is heavily weighted around the fact that you have to remember, this is a 71 or 72-year-old guy. He does not want to go and uproot to Las Vegas or Los Angeles. That is not what he wants to do, clearly, at this point in his life. And then I put Atlanta as my number one because I think you just hit on it. Like, it's geographically close. It's a good owner. Okay, Arthur Blank is a good owner, and there's a lot of talent on that team. I think that they're a quarterback away, but I think Belichick, if he's going to up and relocate, you know, Atlanta's workable. Washington's a mess, but I think it's same thing. You know, it's close by. It would be a smoother transition for him, for his family, for everyone. Tennessee, again, I think that's not a bad situation for him. The worst of them, I think, is Carolina. And they might be the most interested, by the way. But Carolina's a mess of a franchise. Bryce Young is a franchise corrupting quarterback. Just a great kid, but not a great quarterback. Gave up a ton to get him. They're totally screwed on Bryce Young. Why the hell would any coach with any options or resume want to put their career on that situation with that nut of an owner? And then I think LA and Vegas, they're not bad situations. But I just think they're not in the right place for where Belichick is right now. So I would put Atlanta first, maybe Tennessee second, Washington third, LA, Las Vegas, Carolina. That's my list.
Yeah, I totally agree. Carolina's at the bottom. I think I'm right there with you with Atlanta. I think Atlanta's at the top of my list too. Like you said, they just seem to have the most pieces like in place. Like, you know, they really are, I think, a good coach and a good quarterback away from being able to really make some damage.
instability of ownership. Like Blank's a legit guy. Like he's not a problem.
Right, right. But you know, to your point, the Raiders are such a wild card. I mean, the cupboard seems kind of bare out there too. You know, LA is just, you know, that LA team, you know, that is a lot of fool's gold out there. Like that is,
absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like they have some aging guys on defense. Like Khalil Mack is not going to be, you know, young forever. He's getting pretty old. The Boses can never stay healthy. The secondary is super thin. Guys like Michael Williams and Keenan Allen are out the door. Like Quentin Johnson looks like he's kind of a bust. Austin Ekeler probably won't be back. Like they just
saw the decline. He plummeted. He was on my fantasy team, and that guy stomped this year. He stomped.
He really did. And like not only that, but like that's a team that like really has like no loyal fan base or market, like where nothing. They're at. So it's like,
and it's the other side of the country. Like, yes. Oh my God. Like,
yeah.
I could not see Belichick going. I could be wrong. Maybe I'm overvaluing the geography, but I mean, the one thing they have is they have a quarterback, but even that I question, you know how I feel about Justin Herbert. And you feel the same way. I think he's a coach killer. I think he puts up big numbers, but I don't know if he's a winner. And I think like you're inheriting someone else's mess if you take that guy on. I mean, I just don't see it as a desirable position for Belichick, and maybe I'll eat those words in the next week.
No, I agree completely. Not only with everything we just said, but the fact that he's also going to have to go then and compete with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes twice a year too, right? So it's just like, there's really not a lot of room for you in your own division. There's a lot of fool's gold in terms of like the talent on your roster. Your franchise is not well positioned with its market and its fan base. It's like you said, it's halfway across. It's completely across the country. Just I just think it's not only a bad fit for Belichick. I think it's a worse fit than people are thinking for any coach.
I agree with that 100%. People talk about that as the most desirable job, and I'm like, I seriously question that. I just don't believe in the quarterback, and I think they're a super overrated roster and completely irrelevant in their own market.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want to go work there if I was a coach. Okay, a couple other quick things. I'm trying, Justin, now to think about NFL franchises that are worse off than the Patriots are right now. Now that we know they're the third worst record in the league, but I think if you look at the two teams ahead of them in the draft, one of them is the Bears, right? From the Carolina pick. I mean, the Bears have some talent. There's at least a chance maybe Justin Fields could be a quarterback in this league. I mean, I guess I go back and forth on that. And then the Cardinals, I think, are actually somewhat situated to be in good position because I like Kyler Murray as a quarterback, and I think the coach actually did some good things this year. So when I made my list of which teams are franchises are worse off than the Pats right now, three came to mind, and I'm not sure all three of them actually are. But number one is the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah,
because they're stuck with Bryce Young, and he was terrible this year. I mean, he ended the season getting shut out in back-to-back weeks. He was bad. And you can only excuse so much of the lack of talent on that roster. You can only make so many excuses for him. You got to show something if you're even an average quarterback. And he didn't. So they're stuck. And then the Broncos, I think, are in a tough spot because of the Russell Wilson thing.
Yeah.
And they're gonna cut him this year, and then they're going to pay him $40 million the next season. And that's really going to tie them up. So I think they might be worse off. And the third one I came to is the Giants for the same reason. You're stuck with Daniel Jones. Good luck. Everyone said it was a bad idea. They decided to get into that contract with Jones. They're a better team with Tyrod Taylor. They were a better team with Tommy DeVito, right? They're a better team with Tommy DeVito. They're stuck. And they have like the number 8 pick, which isn't as good. So I think the Giants might be worse off. What do you think?
I agree completely, and I think all three of those teams are perfect examples of not only what we don't want to become of the Patriots quarterback situation, but also like the perils of what can happen if you aren't super diligent and are just in a super dramatic rush and frenzy to find that next guy, right? I mean, like the Broncos, they thought they got themselves to a point where they were plug and play. They were super, you know, over the top and aggressive about bringing Russell Wilson in, backfired on them completely. I mean, the Giants, slightly different situation, right? They had a guy that it was, you know, it's just such a 50-50. I've never seen more people flip-flop on a starting quarterback that I've talked to than Daniel Jones, right? See, so half the people you talk to think he's an absolute bum. The other half of the people that I talk to think he's Josh Allen light and he's just waiting to break out. And I just couldn't understand it.
And the rest of us are just missing the big pick. It's so infuriating.
It's so infuriating, but they go,
like, you don't see something, you know, like you're missing something that those people see, just like, oh God.
Exactly. And I'm like, you know, okay. But you know, the Panthers, right. They go out and blow their draft pick on an absolute bust. So you look at those three teams, that's such a representative situation of the peril that you can fall into. You could go out and try to draft a guy with a high draft pick and it could wind up biting you in the butt. You could go out and try to lock up a guy that you think has the potential and it could bite you in the butt. And you could go out and try to trade and sell the farm for a proven winner and it could bite you in the butt. So those are three perfect examples of what you really hope the future does not hold for the New England Patriots. Realistically, though, it's very easy to fall into those traps.
It is. And, you know, the one team on that list, Justin, that gave me a little bit of pause was the Broncos, because they actually have some pieces on that offense and that roster, especially wide receiver and some of the skill position talent. So I don't know. But I think you just hit the nail on the head. That's exactly right. And I mean, the one thing you can say the Patriots have, those franchises don't have is draft capital, drafting it out in the top five and with no real commitment financially to any quarterback. I mean, that's a huge thing, you know. I mean, that, you know, to be able to say they have the cap room, they're not wasting $40 or $50 million of their cap in dead money paying some guy that not everyone knows can't play, a la Russell Wilson, Daniel Jones, that kind of situation. So at least the Patriots have that going for them. Let's talk a little about the fact that the Patriots did get the number three pick, Justin.
Yeah.
My take on this, I hate that they couldn't get to number two. I think it's really going to hurt them on draft day. I think you know, I would love to get Drake May or Michael Penix. I thought I liked after last night. I might be reconsidering that. But I just feel like if, you know, the Cardinals aren't going to take a quarterback. But you look at and the Bears might not either, but I think they will. But whether they do or they don't, both those teams are going to be able to trade those picks, the teams that want quarterbacks. And you look at the trend the last few years, how many teams have swooped up into the draft to get the guy that they believe is the guy, whether that's Bryce Young, Trey Lance, you know, CJ Stroud, whatever it is. Yeah. You see these patterns of big trades on draft day by teams that fall in love with the quarterback. And so there are going to be teams, the Raiders, Vegas, whoever it is, you know, Atlanta, that are going to trade and sell the farm to move ahead of the Patriots. And I fear that, you know, maybe one of those top two or three guys, I mean, they might not have much of a choice by the time they come up at three.
Yeah. I mean, look, I feel a little bit differently about this, just because I think for me, I know you felt a little bit more strongly about wanting to go and try to find that next quarterback with that first round pick. I felt a little bit differently. I mean, I've looked at it and said, okay, like, I think I'd rather them be patient in time trying to find the next quarterback, bring in a bridge quarterback and really beef up, solidify talent on this roster. Like, I'd love for them to be able to draft like a Harrison Jr. But like, even if Harrison Jr. can't fall to three, like, you know that no matter what, either Joe Alt from Notre Dame or the tackle from like Penn State will still be there, right? Like, just mathematically, one of them has to be there. So it's like, you know that if you can still get a franchise altering component on offense at that third pick, right? So I think that's the way I look at it. As I say, I've never really wanted them to use that pick on a quarterback. So for me, I say, okay, hey, yes. Does the 3-2 make a difference? Yes. Is there still going to be a good option there? Yes. But, you know, I could wind up eating my words if, you know, somebody like Drake May goes number two or whatever, and he turns out to be like, you know.
What I want, Justin, is, I mean, this is all a gambling, drafting quarterbacks, right? And it's a game of picking out the guy that you think is the guy and going and getting them. That's the trend right now in the league. And I want the Patriots to be able to say, if they feel strongly that Caleb Williams or Drake May or Michael Penix or whoever it is the guy, I want them to be able to have the draft capital to guarantee that they can bring that guy in. And I feel like right now, the difference between 3-2 is a huge drop in that draft capital. And they might be having to take a really great player. Yes, Harrison, Joel, whoever, but a really great player that falls to them, because the guy that is the coveted guy has already been snatched up.
Yeah, it is. It's a real possibility. But you know, that this is going to be an interesting draft for sure. I'm, you know, how everything shakes out. I'm really hoping that no matter what, they're able to just get somebody who can be a cornerstone piece on this offense, whether it's a wide receiver, a tackle, a quarterback. I think we all know that they need to go offense, and they need to go offense heavy here. Like, they have a good young defense. There's really nothing that they need to be looking for in the first couple rounds, I think, as far as that defense goes. Like, the pieces are pretty much there. You could maybe bring in a free agent or two or a late round draft pick to supplement it, but you got to really hit the offense hard in these first couple of rounds. So as long as somebody impactful is coming off that board in the first round for this offense, that's really what I'm looking for.
Yeah. I mean, that's a fair point. And look, they could move up to take a Drake May, and he might absolutely suck and set their franchise back another 3 or 4 years. You don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's going to be, look across the league, there are good quarterbacks that were taken all over the draft. Jalen Hurts was second rounder. Brock Purdy was the seventh round. I mean, I don't know. You know, maybe the play is you take Marvin Harrison or Joe Alt, and you take a chance on a quarterback in the second round. You trade back late in the first round. I mean, maybe that's how you do it. I don't know, but I just want them to have the draft capital to do whatever that whoever's making the decision feels like is the right thing to get the franchise quarterback. Because to me, Justin, whether it's a second first round pick or a second round pick, or it's that top three pick, they need to come out of this draft with a young quarterback that they can say has a chance to be the next guy. That, I think that's critical. You can't go into the season without another quarterback. That actually brings me to the next take, the last thing I was going to bring up, which is, you know, watching this game on Sunday, what we've seen from Zappe and Mac. And I'll tell you, Justin, you know, Mac Jones was inactive on Sunday, which I think was just like, what a fall, right? You started off as the franchise guy, and now you got beat up by some guy named Nathan Rourke, who is the Patriots backup, which is crazy. The more I look at it, I don't hate Zappe. I just don't know if he's really all that good. And I think that if I'm the Patriots, I'm going into next year. I don't want Mac Jones on the roster at all. And I think the only place that I would put Bailey Zappe is as a third quarterback, competing maybe for a backup job with a veteran. This team needs really to bring in two quarterbacks. They need a bridge quarterback, and then they need a young quarterback. But I don't think you can go into next year with Zappe as your bridge quarterback from what I've seen so far.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree. I mean, you know, I think the only debate there could be whether Zappe is a serviceable backup quarterback or not. But I think you're 100% right that he can't be the guy, right? There needs to be.
Are you convinced he's a serviceable backup based on what you've seen from him? Would you feel comfortable if they went into next year with a rookie quarterback, like a coveted rookie quarterback, Drake May, Michael Penix, and Bailey Zappe? Because I wouldn't. I wouldn't feel comfortable. I think that would be a mistake.
You know, the only way I would feel comfortable with Zappe as your number two is if you foregoed bringing in a rookie next year, and instead you went and got a decent bridge quarterback. Okay. And you said, "Hey, I'm bringing in I'm bringing in a decent bridge quarterback. I'll keep Zappe as my number two. We'll tackle quarterback next year or something like that." Yeah. That scenario. But I don't like the idea of pairing Zappe with a rookie.
Yeah, I want whoever they draft, assuming they bring in a young quarterback in the first round or the second round, whoever it is, I want that quarterback to have the luxury of not having to play next year, unless it's like an Anthony Richardson situation where they come in and you're like, holy cow, this guy's our best guy. We've got to put him out there. And look how that worked out. By the way, he got hurt and Minshew ended up almost getting him in the playoffs. But that's what I want. I don't want that young quarterback to have any pressure to come into this mess and have to be out there on the field so that they can get ruined. Like we've seen so many of these guys across the league just get destroyed because of the bad situation. Going back to freaking David Carr 20 years ago in the Houston Texans. Like that's a setup for disaster. I want them to have a Gardner Minshew or a Ryan Tannehill or whoever, Russell Wilson, that can be the clear starter for that 1 year. And maybe Zappe you put in as a third quarterback, roster spot fine. But I don't want Zappe as the backup. I'm not sold that he even really can do that. So
yeah, I mean, and look, I'm sure a lot of people would probably agree. I think for me, you know, I think we can all agree that Bailey Zappe is not a starter. He is not the guy. Under the right circumstances, he could potentially serve as a backup. I think he would be a great number three quarterback. But realistically, it all comes back to the fact that you need to bring somebody in here. And I think the veteran, bringing in a veteran, solid and stable bridge quarterback is almost even more important than bringing the rookie in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for next year, probably.
Exactly.
You're
right. For the
next 5 or 10 years, no. But you know, you're right for next year. I mean, they need to bring in a bridge, and you can't count on that. You can't count on that rookie to come in and do anything. Okay, I think that's all the time we have for the Patriots podcast. Going to wrap it up. Just I want to end with this, which is we've said what we want to happen, but we haven't said what we think will happen. And I haven't seen any updates. I'm keeping my eye on my phone for any kind of news on the Belichick situation. I think this is going to play out over days to weeks. There are new coaching rules in place. Don't forget that now. No one can hire anyone now or interview anyone until after the divisional round.
Yeah.
So they have the luxury of time more than they might have had in other years. Of course, Harbaugh is exempt from that, mind you, because he's not on an NFL coaching staff. But I don't think he's a serious candidate here anyways. So, you know, I think this is going to play out over the next week or two. We've said what we think we want to happen. What do you think will happen this week? What's the decision? When does it come down? What's the result?
I think Bill's back for the 2024 season. I think that's really what it comes down to.
GM or coach or both?
I'm gonna say that he's definitely back as the coach. I think they probably make a move and try to bring in a GM.
Okay.
My thinking is that if it wasn't already a strong possibility or a likelihood, I don't think he would have even said that he was okay with it. I think his not acknowledging that he was okay with it was almost like a preemptive, like, well, that's probably what's going to happen. If I stay type of thing.
I mean, that was an earth shattering comment. I'm sorry. Like, it really was. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
He never says anything. He never says a word. Yeah, you know, he's someone that you know has absolutely no problem just like sitting there stone faced and giving you nothing.
Yep.
So the fact that he tossed that bar out there, I mean, that says a lot to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, no, I think it's very indicative. And I think that if anything, it tells us that if we want him back, he will be back because I think he wants to be here.
What about McDaniels? Is he back? Because, you know, he was at the game Sunday. A lot of speculation. He might come back. Is it Belichick and McDaniels and a GM? Is that what you're thinking?
Well, you know, if that's the case, what do you do with O'Brien? I mean, do you move him around? Is he the sacrificial lamb? Like, what do you do with him?
maybe you make McDaniels like an offensive assistant head coach or something.
Yeah.
And they work together. I mean, they work together for years. So they, right. you know, they know each other.
Yeah. No,
so
I
maybe
mean,
that's, are you okay with that? If what you said is what happens, okay, Belichick's back. They bring in an experienced GM that Belichick's comfortable working with, but the GM has the final decision making, not Belichick. Matt Groh's gone. He's out. And then you got McDaniels back on the offense. How do you feel about that?
I feel okay. I'd feel a lot better if that also came with a couple of new pieces on that offense as well. But overall, yeah. I'm okay with that. If you want to keep Belichick running the ship, you want to bring in a familiar face on offense that's had success here, and you want to bring in somebody that's maybe a little bit more progressive and with the times to run things from the perch above, I'm okay with that.
Does Belichick get a contract extension? Because he's a lame duck this year.
No, I can't imagine him getting an extension without having to prove that there's some sort of turnaround next year.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's a little tricky, like we talked about at the beginning, because you're seeing credible reports that would make you think both ways from people that you think would know.
Right.
Like Jay Glazer and Ben Volen and, you know, Mike Florio. And I mean, you know, and they're going conflicting with each other.
Right.
Because they're not all one way or the other. I think Belichick is back. I think they work it out. I don't think he gets an extension. I think McDaniels is back and I'm okay with it. I actually like the idea because if there's one thing McDaniels is good at, it's, I think, coaching young quarterbacks, and we're going to have a young quarterback here, presumably. You know, I think Mayo stays as the DC, and I just think you figure it out and you give Belichick one more bite of the apple to get this thing shipwrighted. And it's a huge gamble for Belichick, because if it doesn't work out next year, then and you're not headed in the right direction. Then I think you got to turn around and fire him. But I think he's earned that longer leash than he maybe deserves based on his performance the last 4 or 5 years, just because of what he means to this franchise. So I think you got to you can't push him out. I think you keep him and hope that he figures it out. And you know what, Justin, he's Bill friggin' Belichick, right? At the end of the day. So if anyone can learn from their mistakes and right the ship, I'm sorry, it's him.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it's going to be super interesting to see what happens and how it all unfolds. But you know what? Like we said, I think it's just, I'm super happy to just close this chapter out, find out how the next chapter is beginning and move on to it, because the 2023 season is one that I definitely would like to leave behind us.
Absolutely. This is a season where you don't ever go back to it. It's over. Right. There was nothing redeeming about this year at all. This is just a lost, forgotten year. You forget about it from last Sunday. It's done. It's done at this point.
Exactly.
Okay, that's all the time we have. We're going to wrap up the Patriots podcast. We will be recording an Around the League podcast at some point this week as well. So keep your eyes open for that. Want to thank everyone that might have listened to this edition of the Dr. Football Patriots podcast. If there is big news, I think we will be recording something at some point, because, you know, we want to keep everyone up to date and talk about it with the latest news and analysis. So have a great week, everyone. Enjoy this absolutely crazy time in the news cycle. And we'll catch you all in the next coming days. Be good.